Tino Cannavale, what should we do in the garden this weekend?
Ah, there's a hell of a lot you can do in the garden this weekend. It's been quite windy and it will continue to be quite windy. So protecting plants that may have been coming, you may have germinated and maybe coming up. You can be sowing seed of a lot of stuff in windowsills. At the moment, I'd be holding off on some of your later things like basil and stuff, but tomatoes can go in most definitely. You can even start to raise things like corn or beans. I tend to direct sow a lot of that stuff, but you know, a lot of people have different situations, so you can start raising those things. Pruning, you can still get a bit of pruning in on some of the species. There's been a lot of bud burst after 25 degrees days. It's in the nature of your tree, your dormant tree, to want to start to shift, and the sap's starting to rise. So it's been a lot of bud burst around the place, but you can still get in there if there hasn't been bud burst. Even if there has, you can still prune. So there's you're just going to probably be cutting off a bit of that growth. So control of weeds at the moment can go a long way, digging them out and grubbing them out. Also keeping an eye out for pests and controlling them as you see them. That can be as simple as a physical rubbing them between your thumb and forefinger, which is, you know, the squish method, or you can go a little bit harder and maybe try a spray. But, you know, usually the squish method, if you get in early, works well.
Here's a question left over from our paving guy, Jack, who was in before. Catherine from Scottsdale said, weeds have got between our pavers and the problem's getting worse. Is there anything you can retrofit between the pavers to stop weeds sprouting there?
Not really. You got it sand in there usually. As far as control methods for in pavers, you can use salt and vinegar. I mean, salt tends to have a lasting effect in the soil, but if it's in a paved area, I mean, you've got to watch out for where that water's going to wash to. And as a landscaper said, it was actually interesting listening to that. It's kind of, you asked the small versus large paver thing. I had to transport pavers through a house in the Glebe because there was no other access to the house, and big pavers are the best pavers. Less trips back and forth. So, salt and vinegar can work really well. And that residual salt thing, as long as that doesn't sort of wash down into a bed, can actually be a boon in a paved area. So
okay. That's a really interesting one. I'd never thought of the usefulness of salt. Now, speaking of salt, there was some questions last week with Sally Wise talking about how salty corned beef is, and she said it's less salty now, corned beef, than it used to be, but she still finds that after she boils up the corned beef, if she puts the water on the weeds and the weeds don't grow back. So she said whatever's in there,
it kills
the weeds, yes, so maybe it's not such a great thing necessarily. Let's see if we can help some people this week, because, you know, there is only a couple of hours with Tino left in the world. Let's get on to win in
what?
Margot.
What?
Oh, I'm killing you after the end of next week. It's all done.
Oh, as long as I know.
Murder in the Botanic Gardens. That's what's going on. Tino is joining the patch, a permanent part of the fertilizer.
If you can bury me under the gross feeders like the brassicas, that'd be tops. Oh, spuds. Put spuds in on top of me. Anyway, sorry.
Okay then. As well as the one spuds growing in your ear. Win in Margot, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fabulous.
Glad to hear it. Listen, a quick question for you, please. I was given a beautiful little Bing cherry tree. I didn't have a chance to choose it out. There's something about the graft that's worrying me. I've sent through a picture to the text.
Yeah.
The bark is, it's as though the bark is very young and tender there. Mm-hmm. It's peeling, and on either side of the graft, the bark is quite solid, but there it looks very fragile. And I'm just wondering, first of all, whether this is a really bad sign or whether it's something that the tree can come through, and secondly, anything I could do to support it.
It looks like scar tissue where the graft has joined the new wood.
Yeah, it's kind of, it looks like the graft, obviously, it's a decent size tree, like it looks like a second year old.
Actually.
Oh no! As far as for a sapling, there's some really kind of skinny looking ones. That looks like about as thick as my thumb, if not thicker. Yes. So that graft looks like it's taken, but it may be that there's just a bit of weakness in the graft. Yeah, you can sort of see there that it hasn't completely healed over. What you is it quite the top part, the scion bit, or the top part of the tree above the graft? Mm-hmm. Is that quite solid? Like that doesn't have any sort of separate wiggle movement?
Yeah. No. Oh, I haven't actually tried, but no, it seems quite solid.
Yeah, it looks like it would be. I'd probably just leave it. The bud that I can see that's a little bit out of focus looks like it's got a, you know, it might be wanting to shift. As soon as that shifts, mm-hmm. then you'll be right. Just keep an eye on it. Well spotted, by the way. If it does start to come a little bit loose, what you can get yourself is what they call budding tape. It's a non-sticky kind of clear tapey stuff that you just sort of wrap around, and you can tie that off and bind that graft quite tight, and that can hold it in place. But I think you'll be fine. I don't think you'll have to worry too much, as long as it's not in
a... If I were to put budding tape on it, how long would I leave it on?
Probably just until you get good. If you had found movement in that, I'd wait until your shoots came out about early summer, end of spring, they'd probably be fine. Hopefully that vascular system will be working and that'll heal that wound up quite nicely. Okay. But I think you'll be okay.
And as you know, we are incredibly vulnerable to brown rot. Is that kind of wound vulnerable to brown rot? Is there anything I should be doing to try to protect the tree from brown rot into the future?
No, I wouldn't be worrying too much about that. If it's... you know, copper is a good control for things like brown rot. Brown rot on cherries, it's more of a sort of your peaches and your apricots. So,
We lost half of our cherries last year around brown rot, unfortunately.
Oh, right. it can affect cherries, but, I wouldn't worry too much. I'd be spraying copper, over the winter period and you could do that now even, because you haven't had bud burst, and that would be a good timing for it. But then I'd be switching to something like sulfur as the weather warmed up, which is a very safe one to use and quite benign as a spray. Cool.
Super. Thank you so much.
No, cheers, Wynn.
My pleasure.
Cheers, always Wynn. Always great to hear from you. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. We do have a couple of texts going. I can't believe it. Is Tino really going? You know, why is he going? Tino just needs to spend a bit more time with his family. He's had half a day off in the last couple of months because he's so busy. So the travel in and out and et cetera, it's just he needs a bit more family time. It's nothing more dreadful or whatever ever than that. And you'll still see him on the television.
And the ABC Cleaners Union have put in a complaint. There's too much dirt in here. I've been trying to grow a veggie patch in the corner, but
Let's see what's up with Angie in South Hobart and her lemon verbena. Hello there, Angie.
Hello.
Morning, Angie. How can we help?
Hello. So I've got this lemon verbena plant that I've had it a few years. It's about 50 or 60 centimetres high. Every year it kind of dies down a lot and then it comes back to life in the spring.
Yep.
But it's... At the moment, it's really straggly, and the last of the other of its leaves have died now, and I can't actually see that there's going to be new growth. And I'm wondering, should I just leave it to see what happens, or should I kind of prune it back a bit and cut a bit off and see? I'm a bit wondering what to do. Or whether it's just died in the winter.
There's two schools of thought with a sick plant. One is to leave it alone. Firstly, I'd try and sort out what the problem was, which it may be a drainage problem, too much water sitting around would be a guess. But there's two schools of thought with a thing like that is to leave the plant alone and don't touch it, or another one, which is to prune it really hard and try and reinvigorate the plant. I go with the second one, the later one, and certainly in this situation and certainly with things like lemon verbena where once it gets going, it can be a really vigorous plant. So, but firstly, I'd be trying to solve or figure out what that problem was, why it was failing to thrive. Is it in a really open, exposed, cold area, or?
Well, fairly, yes. I live in sort of like Upper South Hobart, so we're on the slopes above the brewery.
Yeah.
That sort of area.
Yeah.
It's not in a specially protected position.
Yeah, if it is a case of it being really super cold, an old shirt on a really cold night can be useful for a plant, and certainly that 60 centimetres high, you'd be able to get like a, you know, good old office shirt over the top of it. But the and I'd also look at the drainage issue. If it's coming down a slope and it's collecting at any point and it's not draining away, that can also be an issue for them. But
well, it might be. It's I've got a little bit of terracing, and it's kind of because of the slope, the garden beds are terraced, and it's on a terrace, so it might be pooling there. I guess
have a little look around, just have a little dig around, and see if it's staying wet. I mean, obviously, we did get a little bit of rain, so you know, bide your time before you do it. But yeah, if it's staying wet, then that may be the issue. You'd have to adjust the you know, the drainage of the site, but I'd be giving it a little cut back. I'd be first rubbing down the stem to see if you can find any green, and where there's green, there's life, and then you have hope. And then, you know, so then they will come back. And a little feed, as I think you said at the start, they are quite a durable plant. They're quite, you know, they're quite robust. So I would hope that there's a lot of hope when it comes to this plant. So, yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Oh, thank you.
Good luck, Angie.
And if you do get them back, give them a good feed too, because that'll hopefully, if you time it right, you'll get a good spurt of growth with the warmer weather.
That is Angie in South Hobart. If you've got a question for Tina, the number to call is 1-300-222-936. And somebody on the text has given a potential fix for the pavers, for the weeds between the pavers.
Yes.
Nick at Beauty Point says, mixed crusher dust with cement brush into the gaps in pavers and wet gently.
Yeah, we used to do that when I was landscaping, but I would have thought maybe the pavers already had that. But yes, a really good solution if they don't. And a top up of that can be really good as well.
I reckon if you pull the weed out and then you salt and vinegar it and then you finish it with that in the next week, that'd be a pretty good combo.
Burn it. Sorry. Yeah.
Fiddle it with adamantium so nothing may grow. John in Taruna, you've got a non-fruiter in your yard.
Oh, good. Is that you, Tino?
Yeah, John. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm actually in Taranna, down sort of your way.
Oh, Taranna, not Taruna. There you go.
Yeah, no, down at Taranna. And I've got two flagellas, and I put them in about 3 years ago.
Yep.
And they've only grown about half a metre, but they've never had flowers. And I'm wondering whether I should feed them or whether it's the soil pH or... I don't know. So, could you advise me on that?
Yeah, right. Yeah. 2 years in the ground with a flagella, they won't necessarily bear flowers and therefore fruit for a while. They can be slow to get off the ground, off the mark, I think that's the saying.
Right.
Once they're established, they're tough and they're great and they're a really good windbreak. But early on, they can be slow to get going. So, and certainly in very big exposed conditions, a mate of mine's got some down the road, and they've done exactly the same thing in Primadina. So, patience. The other thing also to watch out for with the flagella is: do you have named varieties? Have you got a few two different types or?
I believe so.
Yeah, cool.
I bought them at the Bathurst market there.
Yeah,
in Bathurst Street.
Yeah, you'll be right then, I'd say.
Yeah,
and then just you might want to give them a feed now if you haven't already. and keep the water up to them. You can push growth along with good watering, but as long as it drains well. So, and that's during those warmer months when we get those longer, nice days. And certainly down at Tarana on that coastal bit, it's a lovely spot. So yeah, I'd be doing that and keep the weeds down. If they're only sort of, you know, half a meter high or so, keep the weeds from squashing around them, because some of those big sort of thistles and grasses can actually, you know, outcompete young trees. Even though they've got a woody stem, they're still quite vulnerable. Right. But yeah, so a good bit of mulch can stop that. But yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I'm sorry to hear you're going just when you were getting interesting.
I know, it's taken a while. But, you know, I believe is once you become interesting, soon after that, I become boring. So I'll give you some.
Oh, good luck.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Thank you very John. Much. John in Tarana there. Tarana, Taruna. Let's call the whole thing off. And now we've got Daniel in Funky Cold Primadina. Hello there.
G'day, guys. How are you this morning?
G'day, Dan. Yeah, great, mate. Great.
I've just got a quick question there, Tino. I had a good mate of mine drop off 6 bare-rooted fruit trees last night, some cherry trees.
Cherries?
And I'm just wondering, yeah, cherries, lappins, I think. And I'm just wondering, how do I plant them? I've never planted a bare-root tree before.
Well, dig yourself a nice big hole. You've got some nice soil there, but if you do choose a spot that's got deeper topsoil, great. If you do hit a bit of clay, then dig a nice square hole. Plonk them in. You could put some compost in there that, you know, some organic material would mix through.
I recommend the blood of your enemies at this point.
Yeah, they're always good. You've got to cook the blood though. No, okay, no. Yeah. I'd just chuck them in. I'd keep them well watered. I'd give them a good soak. You can either fill the hole up beforehand with water, put the tree in, and then cover them over, then give them a water. And that'll just take off up any of those air gaps that may be in and around the roots. So you want good soil contact with the roots. And then keep the water up to them. If they're young trees, if they've been transplanted, keep the water up to them over the next 2 months. And if they get going, then hopefully you'll be fine. And mulch them as well. And give them a good hard cut back. That's the one thing with transplants and young trees is prune them quite brutally. You know, it can be hard. You get a little stick and then you've got to cut it back by a third. But the plant will respond with vigor. And certainly in the soil you've got, and I'm guessing you're a great gardener, so with the care that they'll be given, you'll be right.
And can I mention the one thing that I know you've forgotten there?
What have I forgotten?
No. You haven't forgotten anything, Daniel. But Tino's forgotten.
Is it the gas?
Seaweed.
Oh, yeah, and thank you. Thank you. And you can also put a wee bit of seaweed extract on every 2 weeks or so is a good way of transplanting them. So, yeah. Thanks, Joel. Thanks, Dan.
I have learned. I have listened and I have learned, Daniel. Thanks, mate. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Dan.
So, Daniel from Funky Cold Primadina.
Yeah. As kids,
to put that on.
It's like straight out of Kempton, too, is another rap Tasmania kind of reference.
Well, Leon, our morning's presenter, of course, is straight out of Leon Compton for him. Brian is in Ooze. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning to you, Joe and to Tino.
Good morning, Brian. How can we help today?
First of all, congratulations on what you've done. And just a little health warning for next week. There's 2 points, but the first thing, it just occurred to me while I was waiting. With the success of the gardening program and the turnouts you have for OBs, then maybe you've got to have a health warning for the botanical gardens next week if you get a crowd of over 1,000.
If we get 1,000 people, you will have to come masked. That is absolutely true.
There you go. Anyway, the other thing
I'm
was...
I'm worried now. I never had a party before. I remember my mates put one on for me once.
You've never had a party before?
My 21st. I remember my 16th birthday party. A friend said, "Isn't it your birthday today?" And I looked at the calendar and went, "Oh, yeah, that's right." So, not a big celebrator, me. But anyway, so thank you for your...
The other thing is that you've always been a great believer in the cause of the biodiversity of the garden.
Yes.
And we've talked about what wonderful luminary insects like the hopper flies and the ladybirds and that.
Yes.
Now, if people have got nettles and they do occur, then a lot of people just trash them and maybe spray them. But I mean, for a fact that they're wonderful in the compost because the capillary root system takes every trace element from the ground.
Yes.
And when they're composted, they're an incredible addition to the compost bin or even to lay down as a mulch. But the other thing as well, if you let them grow a little bit, and we've talked about this before, there's nothing more beautiful than seeing butterflies. Now, sadly, you don't want to see the cabbage whites, which, believe it or not, on Thursday when it was very warm here, in between the rain, there was a cabbage white flying around.
You've had them out, yep.
But the other thing is, there's a lovely butterfly which doesn't attack any other food plant other than nettles, and that's called the Australian Admiral. And it's got black and beautiful russet and white colours on the wings. And every time we take out some of these little plants, which we call weeds, and all they are is a plant growing successfully where we don't want it, is if we just give a few a chance to actually grow, we could be supporting some of the diversity of the insect life around us. And of course, they're great pollinators as well.
That's it.
Brian, I've got a question for you. If you're putting nettles in your compost, do you end up getting needled like 6 months later when you're putting the compost in the garden? Because that's the thing that would worry me.
No. Brian.
They break down beautifully. And the other way to do it is if you do pull them out, then, and I do this with bales of straw as well, when you're mowing something like in the garden, lay the straw down, and it's the same when you collect your deciduous autumn leaves, and lay the nettles down and chop them up in the lawnmower and they'll go in ready mulch.
Yes, yeah. It's a great way of mixing your brown and green together in one easy stroke. And with the nettle hairs, they're only fine hairs. So they actually what sting you. So there's actually competitions where you can roll them in your mouth. I haven't been game to try it, but where you eat a nettle leaf straight out, and there's a way you can do it without actually stinging yourself. But and they taste lovely.
Our
too.
Official advice is not to eat nettles.
Don't do that. Yeah, don't do
don't
that.
Eat nettles.
Oh no, eat them, but cook them first. They taste delicious. Like gnocchi and nettles. Oh, yummy.
I'm just going to recommend out against it flat out. I don't care. It's just because otherwise people are going to get needled in the mouth and blame me, and I'm not in for it. Brian, great to hear from you this morning. Thank
Cheers,
you very
Brian.
Much. Boris is on Bruni. Hello there, Boris.
Good morning, guys.
G'day, Boris. How can we help?
I've been trying to acquire some Oxalis tuberosa and having great difficulty.
Ah, Oxalis tuberosa. There are certain varieties of Oxalis tuberosa that are considered ornamentals, but...
I may be talking about
the wrong
plant.
The Ocker. I'm sorry. Yes. The New Zealand yam.
Tino and I were sitting here, open-mouthed, Boris, looking at each other going, someone wants Oxalis, the most hideous...
Ocker, the New Zealand, yes. And I understand there seems to be quite a lack of it around for people.
Yes, well, there used to be a bit growing down here on Bruni. I had it in a few gardens.
Yep.
But apparently the native swamp rats have eaten all of them.
They will tunnel for that kind of tuber too.
Yes, they particularly loved them, and they seem to have been completely annihilated out of everybody's gardens.
One of the great things I think about Saturday morning gardening is we bring gardeners together. So if anybody's got any or knows of anywhere that that where you can purchase some, let us know. Text in. I know that
I have found some nurseries on the mainland, but none of them will send them to Tasmania.
Not with vegetables. But yeah, they do. I mean, as you might know, they do grow quite prolifically once you put them in. They are Oxalis. They do live up to that name. But they tend to go squishy quite regularly. Usually a couple of tubers are good to plant.
Are you just having them, Boris, as a nice plant in the garden, or are you actually having them as
edible.
Something to eat?
Oh, no, they're very tasty.
Yeah, they're really, really. And that's the thing with them is is you sort of harvest them, you leave them out. I leave mine out in the sun for a good day and then sort of take it in and cook it. But, you know, it seems to up the sugars or something in them. They taste so much nicer. But they look like little squidgy kind of witchetty grubs, Joel.
They do. I'm looking at some pictures of them now, like a little tiny yam or a little sweet potato or something. And kind of quite tubular, which is good when the scientific name, tuberosa, it actually it reflects it.
Boris,
so we don't have an immediate answer, but keep listening. And if someone's got some and they're willing to share it, we shall let you know and try and connect you together. So I'll ask Caroline when I put you back on hold to grab your phone number so that we can get in touch.
Just out of interest, Brian, how do you enjoy yours?
Well, hang on. Caroline, put him back on hold. Oh, sorry there. Thank you. By the way, Caroline, brand new P-Plate producer, is with us today.
Yay,
helping
Caroline.
out. She's only run a show a few times. Be kind to her if you're calling in. Sorry, question for Boris there, Tino?
Oh, yeah. How do you enjoy your ocker? Your New Zealand yams?
I just lightly fry them.
Yep. No, good.
Even grated in a salad was quite good.
Okay, then.
Thank you.
We've got some serving suggestions as well. All right, now Caroline's going to talk to you and take your phone number off.
Jeez,
you. So
Brian,
if someone has some Oxalis tuberosa, we can maybe help them out. Second last time you will ever hear that little piece of audio as Tino is retiring from radio. He'll still be around, but he's just too busy on his farm at the moment to spend 3 hours coming in and out of the radio station, unfortunately.
Actually, quite a few texts saying that Joel might be the new garden talk back. I don't know, mate. I believe in you.
I now know 3 things that I didn't know a year ago. I will admit that much. But there's 10 million things that I still don't know. Robin says, I'm growing a big patch of nettle specifically for the purpose of making nettle gnocchi, Tino. Yum-o.
Well done, Robin. Well done.
Someone says, Hill Street Grocers have New Zealand yams.
Yep.
And Penguin Fruit and Veg Shop also have them for sale. So
there's two options.
There's a couple of places you might be able to go, Boris, if you're keen on one of those. Steve from Devonport saying, Joel might take it up himself after your years of tutelage. But we are looking for a new gardening person to be with us on Saturday mornings. We're going to have a bunch of people over the next couple of months come and have a try. A couple of our regulars, Greg Kerrin and Angus Stewart, are going to be in and out over the next few weeks helping us out. But we're wondering if there's someone who really loves it and wants to come in and be a permanent part of us. Then, hey, give us a call, 1300 222 and 936, and let us know if you think you might be that person. All right, let us dash into our texts now and see if we can help some people who have been texting us today. So starting off with Jude from Lindisfarne says, my beautiful Fragrantissima, which is always a mass of flowers, has yellow spots on the underside of most of the leaves. I've removed plants that were under it to allow more air. I don't want to take off all the affected leaves as it would be denuded.
Yep.
And to prune now would remove all of this growth. To spray under every leaf would be almost impossible. It looks like the yellow rust I sometimes have on the raspberries. What do you think it is? What should I do? It's really quite significant little blobs of yellow underneath those leaves. And those leaves are looking very unhappy on the other side as well. Yeah. Lots of brown spots. So what is it, Tino?
It's rust. And there's specific rust, what we call rust. There's a
rust
few
means
different
plant fungal problem.
Yes,
anyway. It's huge.
Well, it's a group of fungal fungus that's obviously plant related. As far as controlling them, can you show me the second photo, please? The other one next to that.
That's it.
Excellent. It's quite open. Look, I would. Heavier mulch might help to suppress a problem like this. The plant itself looks quite like it's doing okay, other than the fact that the leaves are looking pretty poor and it's looking pretty sparse. But, you know, it's holding on there. You could, I'd certainly wait to do anything to it. If you're not willing to spray something like a copper over it, which, you know, really, whether or not that's
going to
be.
What would you do if this was your plant?
I'd mulch it well. I'd keep the water up to it, ensure good drainage, maybe give it a feed. And then once it's gone through this next growth cycle, I'd probably cut it not too hard. I'd just probably be cutting down to to about, I don't know, 20, 30 centimetres from where the new shoots are. Try and get a good shape to it and try and open it out. It is quite open because it's sparse, but try and keep a good open framework to allow airflow
through. Would you spray it with copper, given the choice?
No, I don't spray anything really, but, and certainly the copper you need to be using for this is not technically on the organic sort of spectrum. It's, I think, for rust you need to use... oxychloride maybe, I'm not too sure, sorry, on the top of my head. I'd also be using, I'd be keeping any foliage from the ground. I'd be taking it off anything that's coming into contact with the ground, and also I'd be controlling a lot of weeds as soon as I saw them. The mulch will sort that out, but and then really it's a case of hoping that we don't get a season it's really bad for Funjo. Sorry, mate.
Certainly from Exeter, who has, I think, much happier news, says, hoping you can help me. I want to divide and pot up this cactus. Can you give me advice on what I need to do, please? Does each one need roots or can they just grow from a cutting? And so she's got one cactus which has like 50 cactus heads coming out of it. So can you just kind of twist those off and plop them in a pot, or should you try and cut them carefully and get roots?
Be careful. You can peel them off. Once you get one off these, you can usually peel them off from the sides. It's kind of on the edge of a bed there, isn't it? It's grown.
Yeah, it's really taking over the yard, that one. It's growing really well.
Get yourself a nice mix. As long as it's drained well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a cacti mix, but they are formulated for this specific plant physiology. And then obviously we're kind of gloves, gauntlets, perhaps.
Rhino hide.
Yeah, something very thick. You usually find, as I said, once you get one off, the ones around it will peel off quite nicely and you should get a fair bit of the base as well. So, which is the aim of the game, is you want that. You don't just want to rip it in sort of half. So, and try and make your wounds as small as possible. I know it's a hard ask, but you're dealing with a spiky beast. But, those wounds, when you do snap it off, those division wounds, sometimes a knife is good, a little sharp knife, or even a long handled screwdriver can work. A little flat headed screwdriver can work just to prise them apart.
There you go. Get what roots you can with them. Thank you very much. That's lovely to see good news that someone's got so much cactus they want to spread them out.
A good Christmas present.
Ken at Risdonvale says, an idea from your homework from last week for a hedge in shaded area, devil's ivy.
Yep.
Maybe.
Might work. Thank you, Ken.
Lovely. Thank you. Great suggestion. Tiger in Seven Mile Beach says, I sincerely hope your management is providing mental health to Leon Compton this morning. Leon is a Cats fan.
Oh.
And, towards Leon's mental health, I just have this to say, Leon. Ha ha! As a Demons fan, I was very happy to see such a smashing win happen there. Suggestion that Margot from the Botanical Gardens would be a good person. I have put the call out to the Botanical Gardens saying, is there anyone from there who would like
Margo's
to replace you? Good morning, Tino and Joel. How do I get rid of ants in my garden beds? All our flowers and raised veggie beds are infested, says Diana N. Ross. P.S. We'll miss you on the radio.
Oh, ta, Diana. With ants, Argentinian ants, in my last garden, they were everywhere. The way I kind of tried to control them was the use of water and really flushing out their nests by keeping that area where I saw them wet, obviously, and trying to keep some kind of hygiene around the place, as far as sugary things. As far as in the garden like that, yeah, that's really the only way to kind of control a nest is to dig it up, to turn your soil, to add water to it, to try and basically get to what's called filled capacity. So the ground is filled with water, so those ants need to then, come up for air. That can be, depending on the soil, that can be a very long process and take a lot of water. No, I don't really have a good answer for you. Disruption. There are chemicals, obviously, that will purport to control ants, and they will, but they obviously are very limited because ants are subterranean and, it's hard to get anything down in there.
Because we've had ant problems in our house, and the stuff that works is stuff that the ants take back and feed to the next generation. And it's interesting because you use it and for a fortnight, there's still ants everywhere and you're going, this stuff hasn't worked. but it kills all the babies.
Yeah, the
and
borax.
Therefore ants wear out fairly quickly. They only last a matter of weeks or months before the next generation of ants is what you're seeing. And so if the next generation never arrives, so. But it is a chemical answer, which is not in the organic nature of...
Well, I mean, borax, which is boron, will work. That's what a lot of those are. But there are, I'm sure, stronger versions of that as well.
All right. Maggie says, my anthurium has holes in its leaves and brown bits. Any suggestions? Is it a form of scale? It's tiny little microscopic holes and tiny little microscopic brown bits.
Yeah, those barely two bits on the side do look like a scale up and down that stem, or up and down that midrib, sorry. You could control that with your fingers. Just rub them off, rub them over, or you could put on a little bit of soap and oil and mix that with water and then spray that over, and that will coat them. But it shouldn't be too much of a big thing to do, yeah.
Peter says, I live in the Central Highlands and have some problems with moss, which I can't scrape up with a shovel. Do you have a spray solution?
Iron sulfate, I think. It could be the form. Yeah, iron sulfate, not iron-ITDA. Iron sulfate, you can get it for like $5-$10, I think, for a thing. Spray that over the top. And And look, I love moss, but in certain situations, there are on paths and stuff, it can be very slippery and it can be a bit of a safety issue. So, yeah.
I had an old neighbour in...
Oh, vinegar. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Had an old neighbour in Sydney who had invented a little business for himself and his two stepsons where they would go to a farm in Goulburn and pick up big lumps of sandstone off this farmer's property, who was so happy to have the lumps of sandstone gone, and sell them for an enormous quantity of money to the nurseries of Sydney because they came with moss on them.
Yeah.
Chunks of sandstone with moss, which to a farmer was just something in the middle of his field he wished he could get rid of.
Yeah.
You know, the moss is so beautiful. They get top dollar for the extra moss on things. Joylene has sent a picture of a flower and says, can you identify this plant? It's really beautiful. Is that a fuchsia? So what we've got is green tips of a green leaves there, like fairly standard looking leaves. The flowers are hanging flowers, and they're kind of a violet white. They're beautiful. It's a really lovely looking flower.
No, it's not a fuchsia. I'm sorry. I can't identify that. I can take that away from homework. That leaf looks very familiar, though.
It looks almost like a camellia leaf.
Yeah, I'd say it's a native, but... I'm getting a native vibe. No, but I'll just double check that. I will check that. Thank you, Jolene.
So flower ID for Tino's ever homework. Yep. Thank you. Mike from West Moona says, thank you for your horticultural help.
My pleasure, Mike.
And I send a photo of my Kimberley pine with my Myrtle Beach calitris and Morheim's blue spruce in the background. So just to show the beautiful trees that he's growing in his yard.
And these are all native trees, and I think they're so underutilized. Certainly the calitris, I really love I like the actual South Esk pine rather than the Oyster Bay one. It's just a little bit tighter, but lovely foliage there, mate. Well, good on you. Well done. Except for the blue spruce.
Here's a classic question. How do we get rid of onion grass? We have a shack in Weymouth and it's taking over, says Chris.
Yeah, it's a hard one. It is one of those really, really difficult weeds to get rid of, like soursob or oxalis. You can dig it up, but obviously that can spread it. So if you're going to dig it up and remove it that way, be very careful and try and be as, you know, try and create as the least amount of disturbance as possible. Mulch is a really good way of controlling these weeds, and very thick mulch as well. Sandwich mulching and multi layers of things like cardboard and newspaper, and then whatever you can get, like straw or even chip over the top of it. Competition, though, long term is really the best way. If it's in a veggie bed, then obviously the disturbance and everything is a different story. So what I tend to do is I will remove them as I see them and sow densely over those areas where you've got things like onion weed, because you can slowly suppress them and still mulch. Yeah.
All right, we are ready for phone calls again. So if you've got a question for Tino, remember, there's an hour and 15 minutes left of Gardening Talk Back with Tino. 15 minutes today and an hour next week, and then he's done like a dinner. We're dropping him like a school case. So give us a call right now. We've got lines free, 1300 222 936. On the text, Mark in Gardner's Bay says, "Marcotting slash aerial laying of black locust. Do you have any experience or advice or techniques and timing on that? There aren't any suckers due to wallaby." So black locust.
Yeah, the Robinia. Yeah, they do sucker very readily. If you could put a little protection over that, they will come up soon, I guarantee it. And they actually sucker quite a fair way in the right conditions. But other than that, yeah, you could just do, aerial layering doesn't need the suckering. You can just take suckers off and then grow them on. Aerial layering is, as you know, probably Mark, is done further up the tree. So, really just any good bit of wood, usually about a pencil thickness, is quite a good sort of general rule. And then just do it somewhere where it's protected is the other thing. Because depending on how your Robinia is grown, if it is the mop top, then you can sort of go for a more inward branch or less sort of north-facing branch. Because depending on what you're using, if it's black, then it can heat up quite a lot. So, yeah. Luck with it. It sounds great.
Tim and Lonnie says, tilling up the veggie patch, what all-round fertilizer would you recommend before planting?
There's some really good organic fertilizers out there at the moment, complete organic fertilizers. Like your little machine there too. It's a great
little He's got a proper little tiller. Going at it.
You can just add things like blood and bone. Depending on what you're growing though, I would be adding compost if you've got it, homemade. You could, it'd certainly be something I'd be starting if I'm tilling up for veggies and aiming to do that in the future. But yeah, just a complete organic fertilizer or blood and bone. Mixed with sulfate of potash can also be a good little thing if you're growing a lot of fruiting plants. So yeah.
All right, let's see what we can do for Royce in Sprayton. Hello there.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Really well, yeah, mate. Good. What's up?
Hey, Royce.
Listen, I just don't know whether you can help me. I've got a frangipani, and I got him in a pot, and I thought, because I went to visit my daughter on the mainland, and they're growing rubbish over there, so yeah. I just gathered up some gravel and dirt and put him in it, but he's sort of green and hard still, but the leaves are not doing much. They're going brown and that. Would potting mix help, or anything special?
Potting mix can help, certainly if it's, if it's not doing well, you can sort of push it along. Frangipanis tend to, you can grow them here more. I mean, you got it inside, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I tied it around the back. I got a woodshed made of laser light and everything, and the other plants love it in there, but he didn't seem to do real good in there either. So I've got him sitting in the shed right in the window in the sun all the time.
Yeah, with a bit picking up to the, giving them a slightly warmer spot. I've seen them growing outside quite successfully in certain areas in Tassie and undercover, never really exposed. But when they're inside, they certainly pick up their heads. But I'd be giving it probably a quick feed of like a fish emulsion. But if it's browning off on the leaves, it could be the cold. That would be a guess that it's just, it's not loving those fleshy leaves and not loving the cold. But a bit of a pickup if you've got it in a nice warmer spot, then hopefully that'll bring a bit of vigor into your plant. Also check if you have just used a bit of rubbish, what might be happening is it's staying too wet around the bottom zone of the pot, because that's what can happen. It can hold water around the bottom if you've just used a bit of sort of old garden soil and bits of whatever in there. So yeah, repotting it with some potting mix can add that drainage, and then you can just keep the water up to it during the warmer months and hopefully get a good flush of growth out of it. But yeah.
All right. Well, I'll try that, because I thought, when they're growing bloody gravel and stone up in the...
yeah.
I thought, well, just go out the road and grab some gravel.
you're pushing it for its comfort zone as far as climate goes. So we kind of, as gardeners, we kind of got to give them everything else.
Give them a little bit of extra love. Bite a flanny.
Flanny.
Yeah, I'll put it inside next to later.
Sounds good.
That's it, Royce. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Have a good day, mate. See ya.
Royce there with his frangipani on ABC Radio Hobart, ABC Northern Tasmania. Someone says, is that onion weed with the white flowers?
Yeah, yep. Or there is a pink, but that's more native. But yes, that's the one.
It's onion weed. Okay, yeah. It's off the homework. Flower person, it's onion weed.
The thingy. Sorry, no. I thought you meant his onion weed. Wait. No, that isn't onion weed. That's the flower.
Okay, so the homework is back on. We've got two more votes for Margot from the Botanical Gardens to be the expert there. I'm told a Harmony Nursery at Lauderdale have some yam stock as well. And Sally says, I bought a handful at Oyster Cove Fruit and Veg Shop, which is only 5 minutes from the Bruni Ferry. They were for immediate eating. But I planted them. They only need a few. You only need a few because they multiply fast. Wendy has some oxalis as well, so we'll put Wendy in touch.
A little trick with ochre too that I found that if you keep the ground a little bit warmer in the autumn months as it's sort of starting to sort of swell up, if you can keep that ground warmer for longer, you'll get better tubers. So.
All right. Gary's in Devonport. Hello there, Gary.
Hello. Could you tell me the legal ramifications for a neighbour's tree growing over my fence? How far can I go without sort of treading on their toes?
Now, let's say very specifically here that we are not lawyers, and any advice we give you, take with a boulder of salt.
Yeah.
A boulder of salt, like that. Look, I mean, I'm always an advocate for talking to neighbours and trying to sort out problems like that. It's usually long term. That is the best way of going. If it's a danger issue, if it's a big tree that might drop some limbs on your house, I really don't know what the ramifications of that are. But certainly, I know with fruit, from being a bit of a scrumper from when I was a kid, if it hangs over the fence, it's yours. You know, so therefore, I'd say that. If it hangs over the fence, it's yours. That's. But I don't
There's
know how high that goes
line.
Up. Yeah, it's kind of like you only own 50 centimeters below your feet on your property. So I don't know how high up in the air you own legally. Usually there's an argument to be made if there's danger involved. I'm not sure what your relations with your neighbours are.
What happens if I cut the branches and throw them back over?
We're treading into legal territory there, Gary, and that's not a question that we can actually answer for you because it's past our expertise.
And I've seen this happen before too, where people have sort of, chopped up their fence line on trees, and certain trees that's fine, but one, you do get a re-sprout of growth, so you have to do more cutting, but also in some cases you can actually weaken the tree if it's not done near the trunk. You get a whole bunch of epicormic growth
you may have to go to a lawyer, but I think your very best bet is to go to your next door neighbour, Gary, and actually sort that out with them if you can. Look, I will say from personal experience, this is not advice, just what I've done myself. I have a walnut tree that overhangs my yard from the next door neighbours, and I kind of felt free to trim it back to the point where it was no longer bothersome for us, and where branches that I thought were dangerous. But I took all the stuff and I got rid of it.
Yeah, if it overhangs your property, then it's yours.
But you'll need to go elsewhere for proper legal advice. I would not presume to do that. Nolene in Beaconsfield, hello. What's up with your apples?
We're having problems with black spot on the outside, and also there's little brown spots on the inside of the fruit.
In the fruit, and do they go all the way into the fruit, or are they just under the skin layer?
No, they go further than just under the skin layer. They go through probably a quarter of the fruit.
Yeah, and you were saying black spot on the leaves.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there is black spot, but you might also have, and that can affect the fruit as you've explained, but it may also be bitter pit, which is, I think, a magnesium deficiency. So throwing around some dolomite lime will help that particular problem out. As far as the black spot goes, bitter pit can show up as, or magnesium deficiency can show up as, that dotting as well on the leaves. But it would be a good idea for you to spray with a fungicide. You could use a Bordeaux mix. And have you hit flower burst yet, or bud burst?
Not yet on flower, but they're getting very close.
Yeah, you could probably have a crack at spraying some Bordeaux mix around as well. It is copper. It is, which is a toxic chemical, so you need to be safe doing it. But that might solve your problem as well. But One other way too is to control a lot of these problems, if obviously, and use the dolomite lime, but try and create an open shape of your tree, a good open goblet shape, so there's plenty of airflow through and plenty of sunlight. It can go a long way in controlling these particular problems. See?
All right. Cool. Thank you. Now, we've got a bit of a problem with our worm farm.
Yeah.
It's got a few worms in it, but it doesn't seem to have a great deal.
Not a lot of worms? Is it quite, no. Is it quite wet?
I haven't watered it for weeks.
Right. Is it out over, sort of exposed to the weather?
No, it's undercover.
Undercover, cool. Because what can happen is too soggy a conditions. And the other thing that can happen to create soggy conditions is too much of one particular thing, like mushy. My sister used a juicer for quite a while, and that was all the mush was going in there, and it was just a bit too soggy and wet as a thing. You need to sort of sometimes put in a little bit of carbon, and that can be straw, it can be newspaper, but generally just sort of, you know, dryish leaves and stuff can help as well.
So it's probably a bit too moist.
It may be. That'd be a guess. And also maybe try and vary the diet too. They do have tiny mouths, but they like to eat a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's like all of us, you know. Yeah, but yes. I'd be all checking right. Anyway. And also, see, you might need to get the castings out and if the worm farm needs a bit of a clean out, I suppose. You can use all that wonderful, lovely stuff that's in there.
Cheers, Nolene. Thank you very much. We've only got 2 minutes left of Gardening Talkback. We're going to see if we can get through two more calls in the time we've got. It'll
be
a record if we do.
Said.
Okay, then. I think Mark and Judbury, though, has help for us, a solution for us. Mark, what have you got?
Oh, Tino and Joel.
G'day,
I found out that oxalis is a shallow, it's a ground cover shallow thing. If you turn it deep, it will not come back. If you turn it the depth of a spade or a good fork, it will not come back 1 foot tall out of the ground. And if you dig a bigger hole in your patch, and even a metre deep, and bury your oxalis down even a metre, it does not come back.
Yeah, they don't. They do just grow below the surface, don't they? All your harvest is really just below the surface. So is that what you're suspecting a lot of people are doing and losing their oxalis that way, or...?
I think he's talking about the nasty oxalis rather than the nice oxalis.
See, today oxalis has just thrown me. I've been stumped. Thanks, mate. No, that's a great... you're wearing it down, and that's with that sandwich mulching. You're putting layers on top, which is acting as that sort of, deepening of the soil profile, I suppose.